hello and welcome to episode 101 of the Nerd Out Loud podcast, where we talk about the things that you nerd out about and we nerd out about and everybody nerds out about. Today is Tuesday, August 11th, the year of our Lord, 2015, and I am Jeremy Holmes, joined by my illustrious, lovely, glowing, charming, vivacious partner in life and in love, Christina Wise, everybody.
Hello.
You like your introduction?
I do. Yes, yeah? It's nice.
Okay.
It's
okay.
Nice to hear you say nice things about me.
I say nice things about you all the time.
I didn't say that you didn't. Okay. I just said.
Well, here we are, Christy. We're kind of back to the groove. We had a little break leading up to the 100th episode. We had, it was almost a month off, I think. And now we're kind of back to our regular release schedule. You know, an episode a week. And how are you feeling about being back?
We're back.
Yeah? You excited?
You full sure. of
love? You full of excitement and joy and happiness?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. There you go. I'm excited. I missed this. So it's very fun to have the chance to kind of get back to it and start talking about stuff again.
Let's do it. Boy, do we have a show for you today.
This is going to be the long-awaited vegan episode. We've discussed this several times. I've had some great conversations as a result of it, and we were able to chat with a wonderful vegan that is, I guess, a full-time professional vegan, I guess. Is that a thing? Yeah, she's a professional vegan, I guess. That's what she does. Professionally veganizes things.
Okay.
So before we get into that, last week during our 100th episode, you said that you had an invention,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, something that you wanted to Shark Tank, an idea that you wanted to present to
yes.
to the investors.
I do. Yeah.
Let's now's your time to shine, Christy.
Okay. Just like with every good invention, it comes from a need. And what I noticed is I was semi-Facebook stalking someone and noticed that their whole feed was filled with selfies.
Okay.
Selfie at the airport, on the airplane, mm-hmm. during the connecting flight, on the other airplane, just filled with selfies. So what I have invented is, this is a required app that would be playing in the background of every smartphone, as they say.
Okay.
It's an app that after your third selfie of the day is taken,
mm-hmm.
your camera becomes locked.
Okay.
You are not allowed to take more than 3 selfies in a 24-hour period.
Interesting.
Yes.
And is this just the front-facing camera? Or does it, I mean, how does it detect that it's a selfie? Does it have, I mean,
I'm
is
just
this,
the ideas
is
person.
Is it a software-based solution where it's doing like some kind of face detection thing and it can tell from the angle and the blur, you know, the blur in the picture or whatever, oh, this is a selfie?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it like a hardware thing where, oh, they use the front-facing camera, so obviously that's a selfie?
I'm not a developer, Jeremy. I'm just an ideas person.
I see. Okay.
So that is what should be required on all phones.
And then how long does it lock your phone for?
24 hours.
24
no,
hours.
No, it doesn't lock your phone. It locks the camera. The camera becomes disabled.
Okay.
For so 24 hours.
Let's say that there's a way to... So it can... Obviously, it can tell if it's a selfie because for whatever reason it can. Does it allow you to take other pictures that aren't selfies?
I haven't decided that. That might be a later function. We just need to get this out on the market right mm-hmm. now. Maybe with the new iOS update that's going to be coming out soon.
Okay.
Get that out on the market. And then maybe that can be an upgrade you can buy. But also, here's the best part, is your warning uh-huh. on your third photo. So it oh. lets you take 2. It lets you take that third one.
Mm-hmm.
Then it just flashes, you're a douche.
Uh-huh.
And then camera's disabled.
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 That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, and I was going to ask you what that message should be. But you said you're a douche is what the message
is. It can be different, I guess. Okay. Maybe you can even customize it.
I'm
just
surprised
stop.
That you don't have... I mean, I feel like...
How about just stop?
Just stop, I guess. Yeah. I feel like it should be a little bit more developed. I think that whether or not you can take more pictures afterwards is a pretty important... Whether you can take pictures in that 24-hour lockout period that are not selfies, that's a pretty important thing to know. Why do you dislike selfies so much?
I just think that we don't need... No one needs to see your face that much.
Okay. Okay.
And it's a... And on this one... The first time you take a picture in a bathroom mirror where the phone is visible, your phone just smokes, starts smoking and doesn't, it disintegrates. You don't deserve a phone anymore.
Are these photos causing harm to you in some way?
Yeah.
Is there?
It gets my blood pressure going, Jeremy, honestly.
Is there a reason that you don't just remove these people from your social media feeds if you don't enjoy seeing their pictures?
I could do that.
Might be an option.
But also I just hate, there's a new woman at work. Mm-hmm. I'd walked by her office and she was taking a selfie of herself.
Right.
Selfie of herself. I don't like that way. She was taking a selfie.
Yeah.
I wanted to take a picture of her taking a selfie.
Yeah. That's something I could get behind. I do not
shaming
share,
the selfie.
Not shaming. Celebrating. I don't have a problem with selfies.
I think
selfies are great. And I mean, even if I didn't have feelings about it one way or another, I think that it's not harming anybody. And so I just don't share the same hatred towards them that you do, you know. But that said, I do love watching people take selfies of themselves.
Okay.
Like, or selfies of their... Well, I need to stop doing that. Apparently, I just need to say selfies because it's self-explanatory.
Yeah.
It's selfie-explanatory, as it were. Yeah, I mean, it is really entertaining to watch people, like, go through the process of trying to find the right angles.
Making the different faces.
When I take selfies of myself, I am embarrassed because I know there's lots of people like you out there that are like being judgmental or being critical, and I'm aware of that, and you know, have some shame about that, obviously. So I oftentimes find myself trying to be secretive, or I'm either secretive or like over the top goofy, like I'm doing this ironically, like I'm ironically taking a selfie myself.
Yeah. Here's the thing, is it just feels that it's the product or the symptom or the proof of just raging narcissism that is out there in society right now.
I think that there's a difference between narcissism and just self-confidence and self-esteem, though.
Does someone really need 45 pictures of themselves boarding an airplane?
Well, I think...
And posting it?
I think that it's a great way to, if you receive affirmation that way, if that's how you're encouraged and built up. But okay, we could go down this road forever, but it touched on actually an article that I wanted to bring up today anyway. I saw, if you're a TBTL fan, you know who Stubot is. Mm-hmm. Stubot actually shared this article himself, and it very much resonated with me. And it has to do with the selfie stick, which is something that you have also been very outspoken against. The title of the article, this is on Super Bowl Nation or SB Nation, which I'm assuming stands for Super Bowl. I don't actually know. SB Sports. I don't know. It's on SB Nation. Selfie sticks are fine, and people who hate them are broken.
Okay.
By John Boyce. He broke this article up into a series of paragraphs or sentences, and I was just going to touch on some of them. It says, this article is tuned to various degrees of confidence. Changes in my level of confidence / seriousness in my statements will be noted accordingly. So underneath each sentence, there's like a percentage of how confident he is in that statement. Okay. Selfie sticks are great because with selfie sticks, you can take a photo of yourself from the angle that you would like. Neat. The criticism of selfie sticks, most often said out loud, is that they're obnoxious and obstructive in crowded public settings. In certain circumstances, such as concerts, I could buy that. Okay, he's 68% on there. Mm-hmm. Although if you have it in you to be bothered by your half-obstructed view to be barely more obstructed by a few selfie sticks, you're probably too uptight to appreciate music anyway. Try some marijuana pot. It's 100%. 100% on that one. Then he talks about he lives near or he works near Times Square and oftentimes walks through Times Square and mentions that he believes that Times Square is actually the selfie stick capital of the universe.
I agree with that. I mean, I haven't been there since, but I can't even imagine.
Yeah. He also said that he avoids it regardless of the selfie stick issue, but he does say
it's the worst place on earth
when he is there. I have suffered literally zero inconvenience from this, from the selfie sticks.
That can't be true.
There are those out there who have suffered the existential horror of having been bumped by a plastic stick one time, and I don't mean to trivialize their stories or their struggles. I can tell you that this has never happened to me.
I just more Central Park is already known as like the worst place for walking and traffic, and the point about people just stop. I've seen this in Seattle downtown. They just stop in the middle of the street and take the picture and are blocking up traffic that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't hurt me physically.
Yeah.
It's just
annoying. That could be a lack of spatial awareness.
I mean, it's like someone stopping their car on the freeway to take a photo.
Right. Well, I think that probably stopping on the sidewalk and stopping on the freeway are a little different, but I understand what you're saying. The false problem of obstructive annoyance is the criticism people say out loud. The stick component is just the touchstone for their grievances. The problem they actually have with the selfie stick is the selfie itself, because they're waspy as hell and can't loosen up or stop inventing problems. But I would say, I mean, inventing problems or finding problems is also kind of like, that's a little bit your thing to a certain extent.
Oh, with the drone strike.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, sure. it's your bit. And I get that. I understand.
I mean, it's not that I am hurt by this or whatever. It just, I just find it stupid. It doesn't even really annoy me. It just, you're looking ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. The next selfie you see on Instagram or Facebook or wherever will probably have likes and positive comments. Selfies are a way to boost ourselves and each other up. They're great. The selfie stick helps get more people in the shot. It's cool, fun, and unless you're a misanthrope, perfectly benign. Meaning it doesn't, you know, no harm, no foul. And, you know, he goes on to kind of explore that thought a little bit and points out some of the other criticism that people have brought up, mentions the narcissism thing like you and that kind of stuff. And he says, even if it does, you know, goes on to kind of explain, even if it is narcissistic, it's still not harming anybody.
That's what they should have called it, is a narcissistic.
Hey, there we go. You should, I feel
and
like
then it should just be in big yellow letters, I'm an ass.
I feel like that would actually be a really good tweet or something or
should I do it right now?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sure. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I saw that we've talked quite a bit about selfie sticks. I think we come down on two different ballparks. But I will say this, you guys, with the holidays coming up, you can purchase a selfie stick or
no.
Whatever. And you can, Christy would love one. If you're, you know, we've had people mail us things from time to time. I think that she would love to get. I think that maybe she would love to get one herself for the holidays. Have you ever used a selfie stick?
No.
No. What would it take to get you to use one?
I don't know. If someone had one and is like a friend had one and said, hey, let's do a group photo.
I think, you know, I have a little, I get the same little twinge of judginess when I see somebody with them sometimes, you know, at first. And honestly, when I look inside myself and reflect upon why I think I might be feeling that way, I think that part of me is jealous of the fact that they are, that they don't care enough to just do that, you know, that they're brave enough to just boldly do, you know, do that in public so they can get the perfect shot, you know, because I feel uncomfortable just taking pictures with my phone in public. Like, it just feels kind of weird sometimes, or I feel like I need to hide it all the time, or like I'm doing something wrong or whatever. And so I think maybe part of me is jealous. I mean, that's why I always love, like, our friend Robert Pape. Every time that he's come to town or we've gone to an event, he's been there, he always takes lots of pictures. And mm-hmm. I really appreciate that, because we end up with lots of great pictures from the event, which I love. But I don't also have this fear of, like, being the guy that takes pictures for some reason. It's like this insecurity on my part. So I think that maybe part of me, initially, when I see other people with the selfie sticks, maybe I get kind of jealous that they have the either confidence or lack of awareness to just do it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe I wish I could be that disconnected from worrying about what everybody else thinks all the time. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But also, conversely, yes, someone that's constantly taking photos of themselves has the self-confidence, but when they go to the point of posting it, mm-hmm. hoping to get likes, mm-hmm. it's a false sense of self-confidence, because I think so. I think that they're doing it because they want people to make comments, or they want people to like the photos, yeah. or...
Do you like compliments?
Ish.
Yeah. So I feel like that's a normal thing for people to want to like compliments.
Anyway, when you post 10 within an hour, mm-hmm. though,
no go for you.
I think that there's something else.
Yeah,
I think something's broke.
Yeah,
in you, okay. Not me for being
in me personally, or no. somebody that. Oh, okay, well, yeah. Well, you know, maybe I would love to hear from. I would love to hear from, you know, our friends, the listeners. Yeah, pro selfie, anti selfie. Let us know. Tweet us or whatever. Comment on Facebook and let us know how you feel about selfies. Because I'm curious where other people fall on this.
And
discussion.
I just want to define that selfie means a photo of you mm-hmm. that you've taken. No right. one else is in that photo.
Well, I think there could be
no, other... then it's an ussie.
Okay. Okay.
I'm serious.
Yeah. I don't get that nitpicky. I would...
I'm not against you taking a picture of... Like the you just posted one, right? Of the two of us, mm-hmm. and you manually took the photo.
Yeah.
But that's us. That's not the same as me taking a picture, a bunch of photos of myself doing different random things and posting it. It's, okay. There's a difference.
So for you, there's a delineation there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
So we only want to hear about how we just defined selfie.
Well, I'm interested in everybody's take, because maybe they don't fall in line with that definition of selfie. Maybe to them a selfie is, as long as it's a picture taken by an individual, maybe there's other people in the picture, maybe there's not, you know, maybe. So let's wait and hear what people have to say about
but it. But what I'm against is the self photo.
Mm-hmm. Just you. Of just the one person.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what's the annoying part. Mm-hmm. I mean, I told you before that my family had a whole thing back in the day of digital, not even digital cameras, 35 millimeter cameras mm-hmm. of, and we called it self-portrait. And it would, wherever we would go, we would do that. Yeah. And someone would take it, and sometimes it would be of just of our foreheads because mm-hmm. we didn't get to see a preview of it.
That's why, maybe that's why you're so against this, because it's just old news to you. You've been doing
it
forever.
Yeah, we invented it.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So when I'm saying, but I just want you to know and understand mm-hmm. and the listeners to understand that when I'm saying selfie, that is the parameters of which I'm talking about.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I can see where you're coming from, and I understand your point. I just don't think I agree with it, but okay. But I respect you for believing that.
Okay.
Okay, so we also got, you know, if you go to nerdoutloudpod.com, we have all of our contact information on there. There's our Facebook, our Twitter. There's a phone number. You can call and leave a voicemail. You can text it. There's email address. There's a form. Somebody filled out the web form. on our site and sent us a really nice message over the weekend. I just thought I would read it. It's a way of saying thank you because it touched my heart.
Okay.
Hey, Jeremy, I just wanted to say that I really enjoy your podcast. I discovered your podcast about a year ago and have to say that it's gotten me through some tough times at work. I work as a cook for the U.S. Navy on a ship that I'm going to leave out for anonymous reasons. Listening to your podcast has really made some boring hours pass by fast. I hope to listen to your full podcast library and those of TBTL, I Doubt It, Little Red Bandwagon, and Eureka when my ship goes on deployment. Thank you so much for the entertainment.
Oh, that's so nice.
Oh, very nice. Yeah.
I wonder how he heard about us.
Yeah, I have no idea. I'm going to write him back and send a little thank you message or whatever. And I thought that was cool. If he actually digs into the back episodes of all those podcasts, hopefully he's going to, I mean, that's, I guess he's going to be on deployment for, usually people go out for a year or two. Mm-hmm. So I guess that'll be plenty of time to catch up because that's a lot. That's a lot of content. But I love hearing that. I love hearing that he found us. And I also love hearing that, you know, we talk about other shows on this show, you know, and he's, that it's spilling over onto those guys. So our friends over at Eureka and I Doubt It.
You're welcome.
I just thought that was cool. So anyway, yes. And if anybody else wants to, you can send us messages. They don't have to be nice. They can be. They could be mean. Mm-mm. We'll probably read the mean ones too. But yeah, you can just go to nerdoutloudpod.com. All of the contact information is on there. So now that we've had an extensive discussion about selfies and your Shark Tank situation, let's jump into this this interview with Emily from the Bite Size Vegan. Now you weren't able to be there at the time that it worked out to talk to her, but you have since listened to it, and we'll be right back after to discuss a little bit more. And I actually have some vegetable themed space news. So
good, we all
stay
can't
tuned
wait
for that. So this show is going to be about veganism. Is that the right way to say it?
Yeah, that's the word. And somehow it still will, like, Microsoft Word and like, if you're writing an email, it'll still say it's spelled wrong. It's like, for some reason, it's still not recognized. I'm not sure why.
So I just wanted to talk to you about it because I personally, I am not vegan, but
then I can't continue this conversation.
my girlfriend is getting really irritated with me because I keep on saying that it's something that I want to do and I want to learn more about, and like, I'll still eat animal products once in a while, but then like, we go grocery shopping and I'm like, I don't want to buy that big bag of chicken, and she's irritated with me because she feels like I'm picking and choosing, and I'm like, I'm trying to make smart choices and learn, and be responsible about the things that I put in my body, and I'm curious to learn more, and so I'm excited to talk to you about
it. Well, I'm always happy to educate about veganism, and I think, you know, sometimes I think people circle it for a while, and then there's usually some sort of kind of final spark or final connection they make, and they go for it.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's people who start for health reasons to like get a nice butt or something, and then they stay in veganism long enough to make a deeper connection, and then like it holds, you know. But it just it kind of varies with each person as to how they make it there.
Yeah, and could you tell me a little bit about your journey with veganism and how you got started with it?
Yeah, absolutely. The funny thing is, most people have what's called a veganiversary, which is like, you know, the anniversary of the time or the day they go vegan. And I actually don't have one of those because I don't even remember exactly when it happened. I do know that my mother tells me when I was 4 years old, I started to refuse to eat meat or anything I could tell was once alive. Mm-hmm. Like I wouldn't do it. And, I mean, it's kind of been with me for a long time. I was always into nature and animals, and I went to like, you know, wildlife camp in the woods and, you know, would come back and plaster the well, you know, all the girls had like teen idols and stuff. I had like endangered animals that I would put up on my wall, and I would, you know, try to educate people, and I'd go around the neighborhood instead of selling Girl Scout cookies. I got a kit from the Dian Fossey Foundation and would educate about the poaching of gorillas, and people kind of laughed me off because I was super short and just this little kid, and they're like, oh, isn't that cute? And I was like angry. I was like, the gorillas are dying, yeah. You know? So I've just always kind of been like inclined towards that to an extent, but it's also been a journey for me as far as, for me, the journey has been more finding my voice as an activist rather than, you know, just being a vegan, like, you know, trying to find how do I talk about this, because I never really, and I still feel like I'm growing and learning, but it was kind of like figuring out like how to best, you know, educate about veganism in a manner that's approachable, but I never compromise on the issues and my values, but I also try to come at it in a way that is effective and approachable for people who aren't yet vegan. You know, but without, you know, giving leeway and saying like, oh, well, it is okay to do this. At the same time, though, kind of a more of a gentle introduction, but also incredibly fact-based and well-researched is kind of what I aim to do.
And so I should probably back this up. I never really formally introduced you. You are like a vegan educator by trade. Like, like that's your job, right?
Yeah, it somehow became that. And I mean, I think on my about section, something like I'm an artist, activist, and bite-sized vegan, you know, like, cause I'm still very short. But yeah, I have become a full-time activist, educator / artist, and which is pretty phenomenal, honestly. But that's what I do. I spend probably, usually at least 90 or more hours a week, you know, working on my channel and my videos, just because the bigger educational ones take so much research to do. And it's a lot of work, but I love it.
Yeah.
You know, and I love hearing from people who, you know, have changed their lives or their entire families have changed their way of eating and approaching, you know, animals and all aspects of their lives just from watching the videos. And then I'll have people who are like, you know, like I'm not quite there yet, but I'm still watching and I'm going to get there, you know? So there's all kinds of different people that it ends up reaching, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And when you say, fact-based or research-based, are there a lot of misconceptions out there about veganism that you have to respond to, or?
Oh yeah, absolutely. There's kind of the generic ones. There's this meme that's out there that's, a bit cynical, but incredibly accurate. And it's called Carnist Bingo. Cause for some people aren't familiar, carnism was kind of coined by Melanie Joy, who wrote, Why We Love Dogs, Wear Cows, and Eat Pigs. And carnism is kind of this mentality of, you know, like just consuming these animals and kind of having that, arbitrary distinction between the ones that we eat and the ones that we don't eat and things like that. But, there's something called Carnist Bingo, and it has, you know, each little bingo spot is one of the stereotypical objections to veganism. Like, well, what about protein? Or our ancestors ate meat? Or what about lions? Which, you know, we usually just say lions, though, because that's what people will say. Like, well, lions, though. You know, and then you have, I mean, there's all of these kind of rote objections that people come up. So really there's yet to be an objection I haven't heard before.
Yeah.
But if I can tell that someone is coming from a place where they, you know, for them, this might be the first time that they've voiced this objection. They might not know that this is something that literally every non-vegan will eventually ask. And you know, sometimes people are just kind of throwing them out there. You can tell it's an aggressive, like, oh, well, you know, whatever. But for people who I can tell are honestly, they just, you know, they actually want to know the answer to this. You know, I'll answer it like I've answered it the first time ever, you know, because like I said, I try to put myself in other people's shoes. And for them, if they're honestly like, this just came to them and they're like, oh, what about this? And they really want to know, I'm going to take the time to answer it and in a grounded manner for them. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, like, if they honestly are curious, there's no reason for me to be super flippant. But it is kind of amusing after a while. Cause, you know, I mean, I've had people who, when they get really aggressive on social media, like I had one woman on Instagram go through literally every single one of those, like I would answer one and she'd come back with the next. And it was like, it was amazing. It was like the exact same arguments that you always hear, but
yeah.
But yeah.
obviously you don't have to go through all of them, but can you go through or, you know, explain to me a couple of the biggest, most common things that people come at you, and what your response might be?
Yeah. Well, one of the big things is protein, you know, of course everyone, well, what about my protein? The funny thing is in America, I don't even know if anyone is lacking protein in America, honestly. Like we really have an excess of protein.
Right.
And in the world in general, it's probably a very small fraction of the population. The way that you can lack protein is if you lack sufficient calories, number one, mm-hmm. or if you're only eating like highly, highly processed foods, like the Little Debbies and Twinkies all day, you're not going to get enough protein. If you're eating enough calories and you're eating whole foods, you can't help but get enough protein. If you eat enough calories, if all you eat is oranges all day, mm-hmm. you're going to get enough protein. If all you eat is rice all day, you're going to get enough protein. You know, just depending on how many calories you have, because nutrition, the way that we tend to approach nutrition is kind of flawed. Like we look at an apple and we say, well, this is a fruit. Mm-hmm. And then we look at, you know, tofu or chicken and say, well, this is a protein. In reality, whole foods, they have fats, they have carbohydrates, and they have protein in them. Bananas have protein, fruit has protein, lettuce has protein. And so, I mean, me, I basically eat fruits and vegetables. You know, I don't even eat like tofu or any of that. And I tend to get between like 60 to 75 grams of protein a day, which is actually even more than the RDA, mm-hmm. just from fruits and vegetables. You know, and so protein really isn't an issue. If you're going to eat enough, you're good. That's it.
Yeah.
The bigger issue and the nutrient, I mean, it's not exactly a nutrient, but nutrition wise, that's linked to some of the greatest disease prevention is fiber. And I think over 70% of Americans are deficient in fiber. So we really need to not be asking, where am I going to get my protein? It's where am I going to get my fiber? And if you look at plant foods, they're the only foods that have fiber. Animal products don't have fiber. Mm-hmm. So that's why, like, as a nation, we're, like, really constipated, you know, just on large.
Sure.
And that's when you get all kinds of things like diverticulitis, where people are straining, and then it bubbles out in the colon. There's all kinds of nastiness.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone's always wanting fiber supplements and things. Just eat some fruits and vegetables, you know, like you'll be good.
And
so that's kind of the protein thing. And we actually... Another way to kind of approach it is we really do not need as much protein as people assume we do.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, excess protein, we need to worry more about getting too much protein.
Yeah.
But if you look at a human baby, when we're babies, that's the fastest that we ever grow. It's like the when we need the most like muscle and whatever building, you know, and like protein, that's what it does. Is it's going to, you know, generate new tissue, build muscle, all of these things. So when we're babies, that's when you would think, okay, that's probably like the most we would ever need. And if you look at human breast milk, it's only 6% protein, like calorically. Mm-hmm. So really, you can survive on 5 to 6% protein. You can even thrive on that.
Mm-hmm.
Americans tend to try to get like, you know, 20, 30, 60, whatever percent protein in their diet. And it's just,
right.
It's kind of outrageous after a while. So, so that's kind of, you know, protein in a nugget.
Right. Yeah. And so you said you don't eat tofu or anything like that. You're primarily just like fruits and vegetables.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's, I don't really, a lot of YouTube channels on vegan YouTube channels or vegan blogs or anything vegan. It's you like a lot of times it's about, you know, cooking and recipes and I don't really do those too much. I think I've done one or two videos where I talk about where I eat, because what I want people to know is that to be vegan, you don't have to eat the way I eat. You don't have to eat just fruits and vegetables. You can be a junk food vegan. Uh-huh. Veganism on the whole is a healthier and an improvement, but that's not to say you can't do it unhealthily. You definitely can. Oreos are vegan. Sweet chili burritos are vegan. You know, right. You can eat that all day. You're not going to be
chips.
Like, you're not going to be like the glowing vegan health model. but I want people to know that like, there's such a range of foods to eat as vegan. And I find that when people go vegan, they tend to broaden their culinary, you know, concepts, because if you go, I mean, really, if you look at what, you know, we typically eat as Americans, or even on, by and large, if you look at cooking shows, what is it? It's meat with some cheese, and then some meat with cheese on it, and some cheese filled meat. And like, I mean, there's not a whole lot of variety. Mm-hmm. Whereas with vegans, like, you almost have to get more creative, and there's kind of, you know, it's like you broaden your scope, because it's like, Right. Well, I'm not going to do like meat covered in cheese. So maybe I'm going to do something else.
Yeah.
But the thing I tell people is, like, you don't have to go from being, you know, like kind of a standard American diet to being a raw vegan who, you know, does coffee enemas or something, which creeps me out. But, you know, like, you can literally take what you're eating now and substitute vegan options. You know, like, if you wake up and you have cereal and milk, wake up and have cereal and almond milk. You know, if you like sausage and bacon, get some vegan sausage and bacon. Like, you don't have to like change your life in one step, like literally just substitute. And then eventually, if you want to start adding fruits and vegetables and get healthier, do it. If you want to stay a junk food vegan, do it. Like, my motivation is always ethics based. And so I don't care what you eat, as long as it's vegan. The animals could really give a crap how much you weigh and what you look like, as long as you're not eating them. They're happy, you know? So
your big motivation for veganism is has to do with the treatment of animals. And
yeah, I mean, that's my personal, you know, motivation. But the thing that's cool about veganism is, whether you're in it for the ethics, or you're in it for your own health, or you're in it for the environmental reasons, which are astounding, or you're in it for the social reasons, that it's the only way we can feed the entire population is if, you know, the world shifts to a vegan diet. Then the great thing, though, is it doesn't matter what your motivation is, you're going to be helping all of those things anyway.
Right.
So you can get into being vegan to look good, and you're still going to be helping the environment, helping the hungry, you know, and helping the animals, you know. So really, you kind of get to, you know, have all of them happen, regardless of what it is that really moves you.
Yeah.
Which is, I try to put out content that kind of hits all of those, but I'm definitely leaned a little more heavily towards the ethical side, just personally.
You mentioned something that I was going to ask you to maybe expand on a little bit, and that is the environmental impact of meat production.
So for the environmental thing, I actually have a video that I put out recently called Everything Wrong with Environmentalism in 11 Minutes or Less. And I would really recommend that for anyone who's like interested in the environment, because on the blog post, as I do with all of the educational ones, I think I have almost 100 different journal citations and things on that one. But here are some like interesting facts that might, you know, kind of convey it. So, you know, like, and the interesting thing that I talk about in that is that environmental agencies don't really talk about animal agriculture. And the reason for that is because primarily donations, you know, they run on donations. And if you tell someone like, okay, you need to take shorter showers, or you need to maybe recycle some stuff, people are like, oh, I can do that. Yeah. If you tell them to change their diet, that's one of the hardest things for people to accept. And people get very, very upset and passionate about that. So it's really not addressed. But here are some stats. Like, so animal agriculture, you know, we always hear about fossil fuels. You know, fossil fuels are ruining the environment, and we're going to have a hole in the ozone layer, all of these things. But the funny thing is, you know, they tell you to drive less, these, you know, carpool. Animal agriculture is responsible for 51% of all global emissions, and all of transportation combined, that's like trains, planes, automobiles, every kind of transportation, is 13% compared to 51% of livestock. Livestock is also responsible for 65% of all emissions of nitrous oxide. And nitrous oxide, we always hear about CO2, but nitrous oxide is a greenhouse gas that has 296 times more destructive power than carbon dioxide, and it stays in the atmosphere for 150 years. And the thing is, like, you also, like I said, we always hear about carbon monoxide, but, or dioxide, but when you, if we were to stop all use of fossil fuels, like gas, oil, electricity, all of that, we're still going to exceed our carbon emissions, just based on animal agriculture.
Right.
And, if you make a change in CO2 in the environment, It takes over 100 years to show any significant change. However, if you reduce methane, which is primarily coming from animal agriculture, you're going to see a change immediately with significant changes within a decade. So, you know, we're always told to focus on CO2, but really, even if we change that, there's not going to be a significant, you know, effect within our lifetime. You know, and then, I mean, there's so much when it comes to water, they focus on home usage, like take less showers, things like that. But 5% of water consumed in America is in the home. And then 55% of water in America is used for animal agriculture. And then a third of the fresh water globally is used for animal agriculture. You know, like there's things like the Greek yogurts. Everyone loves these Greek yogurts. Like a 6-ounce serving of Greek yogurt takes 90 gallons of water to produce. One stick of butter takes 109 gallons. 1 pound of beef takes 2,500 gallons. So what I did in this video is I looked at like a standard American consumption of meat, dairy, eggs, all of these things for 2000, which is when we had like the latest one where they had good stats. And if you went vegan for 1 year, based on those statistics, you would save the same amount of water as if you didn't shower at all. This is not taking short showers, just not showering for 66 years if you took 15-minute showers, or close to 100 years if you took daily 10-minute showers,
yeah,
both the water-saving shower head. So it's just like, I mean, the changes you can make by going vegan are just not even close to any of like the right. go green tactics.
Why do you think it is that we have such a blind spot to this stuff? Like, you know, like you said, people are up in arms about fracking, or people are up in arms about whether your sprinklers are on or not, or animal testing, where you know, at the same time, if we all just stopped, you know, consuming animal products, it would make a much more significant impact. So, I mean, do you have any thoughts or ideas to why people just seem to not make it an issue?
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I get that question a lot, especially from vegans who are like, oh my gosh, I don't understand. Why do the people not get it? And I did a video that got a lot of people angry too, about the Yulin Dog Festival, because it's the same thing. Like, people in America freak out about the Yulin Dog Festival, you know, because they're killing 10,000 dogs and they're, you know, slaughtering them and beating them to death and all of these things. And that's horrible. You know, I'm the first person to say, like, obviously I don't think that's okay. But the strange thing is that, you know, we say, how could they do this? And then meanwhile, we're eating bacon and beef and chicken and eggs. And
right. And
what people will say is, oh, well, these are someone's pets, or, oh, well, they're beaten, you know, and in America, we treat them nicely. Like, go to a slaughterhouse. We do not treat them nicely. Like, I have the footage. And that's the thing. In that video, I did not put any graphic footage for a reason, because I wanted people to actually listen. But any person who commented that, I'm like, look, I have some footage I can send you. If you want to see what it's actually like in these slaughterhouses, pigs and chickens get dumped into scalding water all the time, which they also do the dogs in Yulin. You know, cows make it past the captive bolt guns, and they're alive when they get their throat slit. They're alive sometimes when they're dismembered. You know, like, they're fully conscious when these things happen. And just because it's happening in some factory somewhere with, you know, sterilized floors rather than the back alleys of Yulin doesn't make any difference to that animal who's dying. You know, for them, it's the same heart-wrenching experience. So, I mean, I think the distinction that we tend to make, and it's completely just social indoctrination, because if you grow up in one country, you're going to be eating dogs. If you grow up in another country, you're going to be loving dogs but eating cows. And then if you grow up in India, you would never eat a cow. You know, so it's just like there's no real reason. You know, it's not based on intelligence. Pigs are smarter than dogs and smarter than some 3-year-old children in some tests. Like, so it's not about that. It's just, it's arbitrary. And I think, to get to your actual question, I think the reason, one of the big reasons that people just will not make this connection, or just refuse to actually change their diet, is honestly, a lot of it is comfort. A lot of it is the fact that as humans, we don't like change collectively. We don't want to do anything that's going to inconvenience us. And I mean, that's kind of a surface reason. I think one of the deeper reasons is that when you come to the point of if you come to the point of saying, okay, there is no difference between a dog and a pig, and what I'm doing is actually, you know, I need to actually change my behavior and I need to change the way I eat. I think that it can be so difficult to face that, because if you kind of open your mind to that and admit that, you're kind of having to be like, I have participated in this violence and I have participated in this injustice. I've been a part of the destruction of the environment and taking food from the hungry. And, you know, I've been part of this entire, you know, horrific ordeal that is happening. Mm-hmm. And I think that actual, like, acknowledging that is it's really difficult and it's really heart-wrenching, because most of us want to think that we're good people and we want to think that, you know, that we wouldn't harm an innocent being, you know? And so, but if you're going to go vegan, you kind of have to confront that, like, you have been doing those things. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes is a little too much for people to get to. And so what comes out instead of that is, oh, well, I need my protein, and, oh, well, the animals are treated nice, or, oh, I buy organic, humane, free range, or, mm-hmm. you know, I know the guy that, you know, raises the chickens I eat, and all of these things that really, I don't think are really at the core of the objection. I think it's more so that, like, people don't want to think that they're bad, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So I think, to me, and this is, like, obviously this is just my own opinion, but to me, I think that's more at the core than anything else.
Yeah. That is very well put. <That's>, stings a little bit personally, which is good, right? So, I have a few more questions and then I will let you go. I want to be respectful of your time.
But
these are probably the softball questions that you get a million of, but I'm but I'm curious about let's call this veganism for dummies. Let's say, you know, today I here's my struggle that personally that I've had. I want to, like, you know, I want to be vegan, and I go to the grocery store and I have no idea what to do. Like, I Googled, you know, whatever vegan shopping lists and wrote some stuff down. And then I just wander around and fill my cart with, you know, $200 worth of produce and then go home and, you know, eat half of it while the other half rots away or whatever. What can you just give me, like, starting tips for, like, the newbie?
Well, and I mean, there are all kinds of different, like, you know, vegan starter kits you can find through, like organizations like Vegan Outreach and stuff. And I've been meaning forever to create an e-course on this. But I think, kind of like I said when we were talking at the beginning, I think, I don't even know, more informally perhaps, is to take it kind of look at what you're eating now, look at the habits that you have, and if you want, literally substitute, mm-hmm. you know? And what I tell people in the beginning is, don't freak out at this point about, you know, like, tiny byproduct ingredients, you know? Like, once you get further into being vegan, like, you can start to refine things a little more. But at this point, like, focus on, like, is there meat? Is mm-hmm. it dairy? Is it eggs? Mm-hmm. And if it's not those things, then kind of just, you know, and honey, obviously you also want to avoid honey, but, like, kind of focus on the big stuff, at first, then you can kind of get into the minutiae, because, you know, there's different, like, things that can, like, carmine, you know, is, carmine and carminic acid. It's a red food coloring that also does, like, it's red and purple and things. And it comes from, the crushed pregnant beetles, you know, and that's, like, you know, the Starbucks strawberry frappuccino used to have that. And then, you know, people found out. And so they changed it, but, you know, I wouldn't worry about that so much at this point. So going into the grocery store, like, one of the best kind of simple ideas is to shop on the outside. You know, you're going to get the produce, you're going to get the fresh goodness. But you can also, you know, go to some of the most basic staples, you know, beans and rice. Like, and that's another thing people wonder about, budget. Like, beans and rice, super cheap. Yeah. And it's, like, totally vegan, you know, fruits, vegetables, beans, rice, quinoa, you know, which kind of sounds kind of foofy, but, if you're
it,
like,
tastes someone, good though.
Yeah, it does. It's good. And if you are someone who's like, oh my God, the protein, you know, quinoa has protein. if you want to get into like tofu and stuff, you can do it. Some people freak out about tofu, but you don't have to eat tofu to be vegan. It's okay. There are one thing that is really good is if you're someone who wants to kind of have the meat experience, you know, like for me, they're like the faux meats that are really accurate. They freak me out because I don't like, you know, I've just never been a meat person. But Beyond Meat is a brand that like they pride themselves in like creating the texture, like the taste. So they're a really good brand for transitioning or for, you know, staying on if you want, because they try to make it pretty spot on. Like their chicken, if you like tear it, it has like the, you know, the looks like chicken. It was kind of creeps me out, but makes other people very happy. So, I mean, that's something you can kind of do is do like, you know, meat substitutes, do dairy substitutes, Daiya cheese. It's like D-A-I-Y-A is a really great vegan cheese. Vegan cheeses back in the day were like cardboard. They were awful. But now they have cheese that melts. They, you know, you can even make your own cheese. You can make nacho cheese. You can, there's all kinds of vegan ice creams out there that are incredible. I mean, it's just kind of like you kind of learn as you go, and you can even, but like what I, like I said, what I was going in circles, what I kind of tell people is in the beginning, don't try to revolutionize the way you eat. Just substitute, just do some substitutes. And you know, like look at what you normally eat and do it in a vegan way. Like if you're not someone who eats a lot of fruits and vegetables right now, like, don't do like what you do and go buy $200, you know, dollars of fruits and vegetables because they're going to rot. If you're not someone who's doing that right now, you're probably not going to do it tomorrow, you know. So right now, just kind of eat the way that you like. If right now, if you, I mean, God forbid, if you were eating like hot dogs all day, go get some vegan hot dogs and just eat vegan hot dogs all day. Like, you know, like don't try to revolutionize everything so quickly. Like you can get the animal products out really quickly, but you don't have to like completely change your diet. There's so many different vegan options these days that it makes it so much easier. You can even like Google, like if you want to get really fancy, you can make your own veggie burgers and things. I know.
Artisanal vegan fare.
For me, I'm a very simple person. I'm not good in the kitchen. I don't want to do anything that's going to take me time, which is a lot of, I mean, that's why I eat, you know, like fruits and vegetables, they're ready. I don't have to do much. About steaming is like my only skill. That's all I got. So, sure. You also don't have to be like, you know, like a 5-star chef to be a vegan, because I would die. I wouldn't make it.
I feel bad even asking, you know, after hearing the experience that you have, maybe when you're around people that are consuming animal products, I feel bad even, you know, but what about my convenience? How much is this going to cost me?
No. And that's, I mean, that's the thing. I think sometimes it's important to kind of, I mean, for me, it's important to put it in perspective, you know, with the ethics. Like, is my desire, is like my appetite and what I want to eat, or like what tastes good to me, or like, oh, well, I like it. Does that really matter more than someone's life? Like, I mean, that's how I look at it. And that sounds kind of crazy to some people, or harsh, because they're like, oh, it's just a pig, you know, but it's like, you know, like, really, like, what is it my right to like say like, oh, you have to die because I like bacon? It's kind of absurd when we look at it that way. And I think most people, if they had to confront their food and they had to look into the eyes of, you know, this pig or this chicken or this cow, and then in their life, they probably wouldn't do it. You know, and that's kind of what I come to. Like, if we can't kill the animals ourselves, like, the fact that we have to pay other people to inflict this cruelty, does that really give us the right to then eat its byproduct? Like, you know, it's like we want it hidden away. We don't want to see it. We just want to benefit from it. And it's kind of like, you know, if you can, like, there's something amiss there, you know? But for someone who's new, they're not going to be making all of those connections. And that might not be something to be able to gut check yourself, as far as like, well, you know, I really want to eat this, but I got to think about the animals. Because when you're brand new, maybe it doesn't even connect yet, you know, and that's fine. Because there's usually a bit of a time before that happens, if it ever happens. But there are totally ways to make veganism cheap and convenient. You know, like some of the fastest food, like we've talked about, like fruit is really fast food. Like it's ready. Right. There. You can paginate with dates. No one's ever tried. Okay. So a lot of people, when I say dates, they've tried like the shriveled, nasty, dried, hard as a rock, like Deglet Noor dates in their like grocery store, and they're disgusting. If you order like really good dates, like some organic medjool dates, it's like candy. It like melts in your mouth. It's like the sugariest, tastiest stuff you can ever eat. If you're a big sweet tooth person, like they will make you so happy. And dates are great for flying and stuff. You pack them, they're very compact. They're more calorically dense, but it's not letting people, oh, sugar, I can't have sugar. It's not, there's a difference between processed sugar and sugar that comes in a beautiful fiber package that slows the absorption of the sugar into your bloodstream, you know?
Right,
so,
yeah.
And that's what fruit is, unless you're like juicing it. Like you're getting this, you're getting the fiber, you're getting, all of the, you know, like the nutrients, like they're very nutrient dense, that you need. Bananas are great for that. You know, all kinds of fruit, very fast food. Like I said, beans and rice, super, super cheap. There's even some ramen that's vegan. I mean, come on. I have a friend of mine who was homeless for a good period of time and was vegan. Hmm. Like, so it's totally doable.
Yeah.
And more there are, you know, more vegan restaurants out there, and a lot of the things that people eat already are vegan. They just don't think about it. One video that I would recommend people checking out if they're worried about convenience is I have a video called, and if you go to my website or you go to my YouTube channel, on YouTube channels, they have like, if you go to the actual channel page, there's a little search. It's like a little, what is it called? Not a microscope, magnifying glass. And you can like search for a term. So there's a video called, Vegan Gas Station Food Challenge, where I was moving from Florida to Massachusetts and I stopped at this podunk gas station in the middle of like, you know, backwater Florida. And I went into this gas station to see what was vegan. And there was a lot of options, you know, and it's a freaking gas station in the middle of country, you know? So, there's a lot more like kind of hidden things than people really think about.
Yeah.
And you can get all kinds of good, they even have, I was really surprised. They had these like specialty vegan cookies there, which was really weird. This is not like, you know, Florida, number one, is not super vegan friendly. And this was like super like country area, Florida. So, you start to get more of like the vegan radar eventually as you get into it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Find options.
Well, Emily, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk today.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to make sure that people can find you if they're looking for. Is your website the best place for people to go?
Yeah, I mean, you can go to bitesizevegan.com. It's not size duh. A lot of people think it's size. Well, actually, I think I bought that domain because so many people get it wrong. But yeah, you can go to bitesizevegan.com. There you can also find my YouTube channel, which is the kind of the backbone of everything, and my other social media links. You can contact me through my website. I answer every email personally. Sometimes it takes me a week or more just because I'm the one person doing it. but I do get there. And I just want people to know it doesn't have to be scary. It doesn't have to be, even though the repercussions of going vegan are earth shattering more or less, it doesn't have to like, you know, shatter your life entirely. You know, I do believe that it will change you as a person. But it's not going to happen overnight, and it doesn't have to be this huge, you know, oh my God, I'm going to go vegan, you know, and another thing too, is like, there's no prerequisite, like for a vegan type, like you don't have to be a liberal. You don't have to be a hippie. You can be a Republican vegan. You can be a Christian vegan. You can be a Muslim vegan. Like it's no respecter of persons. I've always said there are enough animals to not kill and enough cruelty to not inflict for all of us. Like there's no typical vegan. Yep. Anyone can be vegan.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of what I want people to know. And that it's like, you know, everyone's welcome. And if you talk to vegans who are douches, just, I know it happens.
Sure.
And that's the thing, like any group out there, the people that are the loudest are going to be the douches.
Yeah.
And so just kind of know that there's others out there who aren't douches. And who want to actually help you get to where you want to be. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Emily. I appreciate it very much.
Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, Christy, I thought maybe we could start off the discussion with you listened to the interview.
Mm-hmm.
What are your initial thoughts about the interview? And, you know, I know that you also have had different phases in your life with
meat and no meat and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you have any.
I do have some thoughts. That. I think that she had really great things to say.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know how much you want to get into my story of it, but when I was 10, I decided I didn't want to eat meat anymore because I made the connection of what that meant.
Yeah.
And that was a really difficult time in the 80s to be a vegetarian because basically your options are cheese and pasta based things,
mm-hmm.
or tofu, not in the way we think of tofu now, just this big slimy white block.
Yeah.
And my mom already wasn't that good of a cook. She's a good baker, but not a good cook.
Yeah.
So to tell her that now there's some kind of restriction going to be going on, I ate a lot of grilled cheese sandwiches. I had this ongoing joke that a person can't live off side dishes alone. It was mm-hmm. always like whatever the side was, mm-hmm. is that was what my dinner was going to be. When you have a full menu, there's so many more options now. But in the 80s, it was a lot of potatoes, mm-hmm. potato salad. I mean, even 80s and also being in the Midwest,
yeah.
salads were iceberg lettuce with Thousand Island dressing and cheddar cheese. It yeah. still is to this day. If you go yeah. to Minnesota, that's what a salad bar is. So the very limited choices. They didn't have all this fake meat substitutes or whatever at the time. And then growing up, then it started to be released. These, you know, you could get sausage, Morningstar sausage and veggie burgers. And I just sort of, and she touched on this, that I wasn't eating meat because, one, the killing of the animals, and two, texture. Texture is the thing that started me not liking it to begin with. And then when I realized I was eating muscle and flesh, mm-hmm. that kind of put it over the edge for me.
Yeah.
So to try to eat something that was basically chemicals and stuff put together to try to act like meat and taste like it was almost weirder than actually eating meat. I mean, it's not because nothing's being murdered for it.
Yeah.
But so I didn't eat any of those substitutes either for a while. And then in high school, I was vegan for a couple months. And it's too hard because I love cheese.
Yeah.
And then there was a diet book called like Skinny Bitch in the Kitchen or something like that. That's okay. All vegan.
Yeah.
And I did that for a while. But like she said, it was basically junk food. Vegan, because you can be vegan and eat even more unhealthy than you are now, especially because a lot of prepackaged food can be vegan. But yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciated a lot about what she had to say, and I appreciate a lot about her website. The biggest things that I appreciated are that she has such a she casts a wide net. She makes it very easy. You know, I appreciated the kind of just start where you are. You know, she even said you can be a junk food vegan. Like you can, there's a lot of different ways you can do it, especially when you're getting started. Like don't worry so much about all the crazy, you know, food dyes that might have animal byproducts or mm-hmm. whatever in them. So, I mean, do you think that it's something that you would ever do or explore or think about?
Another thing that's hard about it is at the time when I was doing it and it was more junk food, is it's hard to cook for one person.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, I don't know, if someone cooked it for me, yeah, I would,
yeah,
I'd be all over it. If they did the grocery shopping and yeah. read all the packages and prepared it, I would definitely eat it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I'm not opposed to it because
it was easy or something.
Right now what happened is I started eating fish probably 10 years ago. I just was anemic
mm-hmm.
and getting sick, and I needed protein, and I wasn't getting it. I mean, I know she says that we don't need that much protein, or you get it from broccoli, but I wasn't getting enough from broccoli, so I needed to substitute it. So I started eating fish, but even that is very limited because if it's too meaty or mm-hmm. textury, I have to either overcook
yeah,
it or I
can't
do it.
No, any bones or
no bones, right? No skin on yeah, it. Like
you need to
have a lot
not have
of
anything
rules around that
that reminds you that it's coming from an animal, basically.
Right. And then I started doing paleo, and I had meals delivered, and fish was too expensive, or they couldn't come up with enough things. So I had a chicken, and that's the same way. It has to be chicken breast that's cut up to the point. I mean, you have to do it for me, cut it up, or like completely shredded to the point where it doesn't even look like it anymore. Yeah. And just, I mean, just for that. And then of course, I had a bacon wrap date.
And
loved that. So those are the two things I'll have, is chicken completely murdered
chicken,
beyond
fish,
its
and bacon.
I
mean, I tweeted today something, like I saw a tweet from the Seattle City Council saying that we're at like stage two water rationing, mm-hmm. and they're asking people to cut back on showers and to be aware of that kind of stuff. And I just thought, like, I just tweeted, hey, this is if we were that worried about, if everybody stopped eating meat, we'd save a bunch of water, which is something that I have always known to be true. And then after talking to Emily and looking into some of her videos, and which, by the way, all of her videos and all of the stuff on her site is research based. It's mm-hmm. really well thought through and planned out and cited. She has the citations for everything on all of the stuff. So she puts a lot of work into those, and they're really well done, and they're really well cited, which I appreciate. I appreciate it very much. But somebody wrote back to me and said, are you becoming a vegetarian?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is something just on a personal level that I've been thinking about for a while, because I've been just as, you know, you like watch different documentaries, and just through the course of learning about stuff, like talking to Emily about that stuff, watching those videos, reading some of the stuff that people post, that kind of stuff. I am becoming more and more aware, or it's become something that I'm more and more interested in. So somebody wrote and said, are you becoming a vegetarian? And my honest response when I think about all of this is that I'm kind of running out of reasons not to.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I look at it in just a sane, rational way, you know, I kind of try and look at the world through, you know, what I'm here for, whatever, 70, 80 years or what, however long I'm going to be here. And, you know, I feel like we are, hopefully regularly progressing and evolving as a society. And, you know, I have hope and goodness in my heart and hope that we're improving and, you know, trying to take care of the world that we live on and all that kind of stuff. Just like want to be a responsible citizen of humanity. And I feel like if you just look at the facts that are presented, I feel like you can make a huge impact by not eating meat. Like just by not eating meat, you can save more water than if you stop showering completely. And I mean, that just the environmental impact alone is a pretty compelling reason to cut meat out of your diet. Just that,
for sure.
Like just the environmental impact, not the treatment of animals, not all that kind of stuff. So I feel like, I don't know. It's so weird that I can, and maybe a little bit upsetting that I can have that knowledge. And, you know, I've had meat. I've had animal products since I had this conversation with Emily, or as I've learned all this stuff. So it seems weird that I can have that. I don't know where that disconnect is. You know, I don't know I don't know why I'm hesitant in like taking that step and just doing it.
Yeah. What I don't understand is how people justify the different animals they're willing to eat, and those that are, it's murder if you kill a dog and to eat it.
Yeah.
It's disgusting and it's gross, but it's okay to kill a cow. That's dinner.
It does. I struggle a lot with the hypocrisy, and I doubt it. Dollimore has been talking about this on their last couple of shows. Episode 145 and 146, their last couple shows that they put out, they've been kind of touching on this as it relates to the whole Cecil the Lion situation, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's old news at this point. Everybody's moved on to the new thing that they're upset about or whatever. But you know, it does feel hypocritical to me that I saw so many people being so wildly outspoken about the egregiousness of this Cecil the Lion being murdered or whatever, all of those people consume animal products.
Mm-hmm.
And so it feels, the rage feels very displaced.
Well, you don't know if all of them do.
Well, I'm all, okay. The majority of them probably do, or a very large majority of them probably do. So it just feels, it feels very misplaced and it feels very hypocritical. I don't know if maybe it's a way for them to, because I mean, I agree that it's bad. And I also agree that, you know, the treatment of animals and the environmental impact of animal products that we consume and all that kind of stuff, I also agree that that's bad. I'm not saying that it has to be one or the other, but I just, it feels very misplaced to me. And it's very curious to me that we as a society, it feels like, you know, there's lots of smart people out there. And so I feel like even if you don't give a shit about the animals, look at the environmental impact, look at the, the financial impact or the economic impact, I mm-hmm. guess, of these animal products. It's expensive. It's wasteful. I mean, I just feel like even from an economic perspective, from an environmental impact perspective, like that enough seems like it should be at least something that we're talking about more. Like, I'm not trying to be militant, like this is something that needs to be forced on everybody. But it seems like maybe something that at least could start to become more of a main conversation piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen a 10 news stories about not watering your lawn, but nobody's talking about the fact that that's, you know, watering your lawn is, or you know, all of our municipal water usage or whatever, that's 15% or whatever. That's a very small percentage of the water usage that
mm-hmm.
the amount of water that we use as a country. So it just seems, it seems weird to me that it's not more of a primary conversation, and I'm not quite sure where that disconnect is.
Well, just the land that's used for food to feed the wild or the livestock,
yeah,
could, if they replaced it with crops that could feed people, there would be no one hungry.
Yeah.
I mean, they could feed all of the homeless people. They could feed all of the children that don't have food to eat.
So what? Why do you think it is that we're not all why do you think it is that there's not legislation going to place about, like, this, or, you know,
what would the legislation be?
Oh, I don't know. Tax meat a shit ton, or put like a water usage tax on these animal products that use such an egregious amount of
the
resources.
The problem with that is that then the farmers just get subsidies to make up for that.
I
don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that that's not a good idea, but I don't think taxing something that much, I mean, that just makes it harder for people without resources to be able to get nutritious food.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even arguing about whatever, that it's not necessarily that good for you.
Oh, okay.
Just saying that when they do a calorie balance of people under a certain income and they're barely able to function with the amount of calories that they're getting per day, and then we say, oh, but that ground beef that you're using to feed your family for a week, and it's easy to stretch it out and put in a bunch of ingredients, you have to pay $3 on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
know that that's necessarily, that could be it. I won't pretend to have a full understanding of the subject. I think
people need to make themselves aware of it and choose it on their own.
Yeah.
And
that
will be less supply and demand. That's how that's how it works.
Yeah. Yeah.
Free market. Economy
free
works.
Market system, baby.
So if everyone was aware of it using water and everything and also where they can get their calories, but that's the problem, is that an organic orange is how many more times, I don't even know the numbers, than buying a Twinkie.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're
well,
only
there are cheap solutions. Rice and beans and that kind of stuff is cheap.
The meat industry is a very rich lobby.
Mm-hmm.
It will never go through, and they make it so that these things don't get known. There's little documentaries you can watch. Fork Over Knives.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Diet for a New America. All those things are great. Food Inc. That's a really good one. But at the same time, it's just they make it cheaper and cheaper, and the government is subsidizing that. So, like I said, you can feed a family of four on something terrible for them for a week, and salad and vegetables and, I mean, rice and beans are relatively cheap, but nutritious whole foods are very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost as if it's almost a luxury to be able to choose that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I understand what you're saying there.
And I mean, I think, I'm not against it because I choose that for myself.
Yeah.
So I'm not against it. I'm just saying that it's not, I don't think that the solution is to tax it out of existence.
Sure. I mean, that was just an example because you asked me offhand, you asked me what legislation. I guess overall my hope is that, these issues can become more of a conversation point, because my honest belief, and if there's people out there that have data that shows otherwise, or, you know, have other viewpoints or whatever, I would love to hear it. But my personal belief is the more I get into this, I mean, there's personal reasons, obviously, just talking about the ethical treatment of animals and that kind of stuff. But
mm-hmm.
I mean, just from an environmental impact, from an economic impact, that kind of stuff, I feel like the data seems pretty clear that it's a more responsible, I feel like it's a more responsible choice, you know? And like I said, on a personal level, yeah, I'm running out of reasons not to change, you know, the food that I eat and the products that I consume, I guess. So I don't know. I hope that it can become more of a conversation point, you know,
with us or in general,
just in general.
Okay.
You know, society as a whole, I hope to start some conversations about it. Maybe this will start some conversations about it. You never know. As Jesse says on I Doubt It with Dalmore, they always are trying to move the conversation forward.
Okay.
So I guess I'm doing my part.
Sounds good.
So Christy,
mm-hmm.
would you mind if I share
T-minus
some of
3
this?
Minutes and counting. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Are you ready? Are you mm-hmm. excited? So this last Monday, August 10th, this Monday, the crew of the International Space Station actually enjoyed a meal of red romaine lettuce that was grown on the International Space Station.
I have a question.
Yes.
Before they eat it, do they put it in a food dehydrator?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. No, this was actually green, leafy, like not reconstituted food. I think, I can't remember. I feel like it was eaten with beans and some kind of cheese sauce
mm-hmm.
and a tortilla. Every time I've seen astronauts eating, there's a lot of tortillas.
That's
there's a lot of tortillas
perfect.
Involved because they take the tortilla, they take something, some kind of substrate, sticky substance like beans
mm-hmm.
and spread it on the tortilla. And then they can
vegan.
They can stick other stuff to it. So they can stick whatever, hot dogs or mm-hmm. I've seen them eat lots of different things, but they, a lot of tortillas going on. So yeah, they didn't dehydrate it, but they did. They had disinfectant wipes that they wiped it down with. They ate half of the lettuce that they grew, and the other half has been frozen and will return to Earth in one of the pods, you know, probably a dragon capsule that comes back down to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it was grown in these little, like, they call them pillows, but imagine like a sealed Ziploc bag that had soil in it and the seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And they prepared them all, you know, so from the same seed, same batch, all that stuff. They you know, watered, they activated them, some of them on Earth, and grew them, tested everything to make sure it'd be okay from that, all that same batch. They sent the other half up to the space station. It was on the space station for about a month and a half, I believe. And then one of the astronauts activated it, they called. So probably just added some water to the seed, basically. And then it it grew, and they eat it. They eat it. They ate it.
Mm-hmm. And did they give a thumbs up?
I guess, yeah. Yeah. So it's they're doing the experiment because NASA is on this thing called the Pathway to Mars. Basically, we're trying to get humans to Mars, and they want to be able to grow their own food, obviously. I mean, for obvious reasons, so they can have replenishable, what's the word I'm thinking of? That's not single use. Not stuff that needs to be resupplied, but that resupplies itself. They can send a bunch of seeds up and sustainable, I guess, is the renewable. Renewable is the word that I'm looking for. They want to have renewable food sources for obvious reasons, but also a huge impact or a huge reason that they want to have it is for is just for morale because they feel like it's going to help the astronauts in times of isolation when they could feel, you know, depressed or separated from humanity for obvious reasons. It will help them feel better emotionally to be able to have fresh fruit and vegetables and things that they can actually eat, which is part of the reason that they're doing these experiments where they're growing food on the space station.
I'm just glad they don't dehydrate it first.
Yeah, why?
Because all the space food is dehydrated.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was a joke, Jeremy.
I see.
Space joke.
Oh, I see. Got it. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for that, Christy.
You're welcome. You can use that one if you want.
I appreciate it. All right. Well, we're a little longer than we usually record. We're this is a little bit longer episode than we usually put out, but we have lots to talk about.
Good.
Christy, is there anything else you wanted to say, or do you want to take this plane in for a landing?
Let's land it.
Let's land this bad boy. Guys, be sure to check out our guest's website, bitesizedvegan.com. She's got lots of great content on there, all of her videos, her YouTube channel. Like she said, it's kind of the backbone of what she does, but there's links to all of her stuff on the website. And it, like I said, it's well thought out. It's, I don't know. It's got me thinking quite a bit anyway. So I definitely appreciate her coming on. And we would love to hear your thoughts, you guys. Are you a vegan? Are you not? Are you pescatarian? Or, you know, whatever. What do you consume and why do you choose to consume? And do you care? And do you think it matters? And will you take a selfie of yourself while eating a piece of tofu? Is what we want to hear. And you can find all of our contact information, nerdoutloudpod.com, Facebook, Twitter, all that fun stuff is all on there, and we would love to hear from you. So with that, Christina, you have any last words?
Never eat cake for breakfast.
Especially if it has animal byproducts in it.
Let your nerd flag fly.
That was a week. That was a bad one.